Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios, it's time for St. Louis Business Radio. Now here's your host, Michael Greenberg.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Talk with the Top St. Louis. Today I've got on David Deck, who is a partner at Built to Lead. David, how are you doing today?
Good.
You have a bit of an interesting career path. You started in professional soccer and then became a professor.
Correct.
And from there, you went on to join the family business. Could you walk me through that?
Sure. Grew up believing that soccer was going to be my career growing up in St. Louis and following the Steamers and seeing how big soccer was here. That was like the big dream for me. Before the MLS started, there wasn't much, but there was something there. And I, you know, achieved that goal and thought I was going to play and coach and teach. And that was going to be my life, never step a foot into an office. And lo and behold, me and curriculum did not get along. The school wanted me to follow a certain protocol for what I was teaching. And I wanted to teach kids more along the Dead Poets Society path, where they're inspired, they're engaged with learning more than they are the content. So after a few years of butting my head up against administrative walls, I said to my family, hey, I don't know what else I'm going to do. You mind if I help out with the family business? So that was in 2000. We were selling shoes online in the mid to late 90s. And I joined, and we were five people, about a million in sales.
You took it quite far from there, didn't you?
Yeah. Kind of on treating people well and servicing the customer. We went from, like I said, 1 million in 2000 to 32 million in 2008.
Wow.
With 80 plus employees, and we were acquired by New Balance.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Tell me, there has to have been a change to go from 1 to over 30 million. What happened?
Well, what happened was we really built our company on service first and foremost. There were times when, you know, even me as a good-hearted person who believes in people, I felt like customers could have been taken advantage of us. And my stepfather said, it doesn't matter. You service the customer. So there were times when, you know, a customer might say, hey, my shipment didn't arrive in time, but I'm flying through Chicago. What can you do? And we were like, go to the airport, hand deliver it. We started writing hand thank you notes back when that wasn't really something to do. And so we really focused everything on the customer, make sure that they were serviced beyond measure and told 10 people. So that was our marketing. That was our business focus. And it worked. And we also took care of our employees. You know, we invested a lot in them as people. We cared about them. We created a culture where it wasn't just work. It was about coming together as a group that believed the same things. And those two things were really the recipe that got us to the 32 million.
And those seem like very similar things. One just focused to the customer and one to the employee.
Correct.
Would you say that you've carried that people first focus onwards?
Yeah. So when we were acquired, it was a really scary time because we had built a great culture, family run business, but New Balance was the same. And so when they acquired us, they said, we want you to teach us how to fish. You know, it would take us a long time to learn to do this on our own. So teach us what it takes to service a customer. And so, but they had then the brand recognition, the investment. We went from 32 to 100 million in less than 5 years.
Wow.
Launched sites globally, and it was amazing. And they allowed us to stay true to ourselves and core centered and focused on the right things. And you know, and then we hit the 100 million mark, and it gets a little scary. And so we talked about what's the right next step. We have this big engine in St. Louis, and so we wanted to connect it more with Boston. And that was when I started to want to find my own path. I had done so much in this realm that I kind of got ready for my next chapter.
And tell us about that. Tell us about Built to Lead.
Yeah, so Built to Lead was a company when we were acquired. They said, like I said earlier, they wanted us to stay true to ourselves and change them more than them change us. And that was a difficult and interesting, you know, objective from the CEO is stay, you know, we're not acquiring you to change you. We're acquiring you to change us is a big challenge. So we hired Built to Lead. And Built to Lead was a company that was a person who came in and said, okay, so Built to Lead is about leading yourself first. How much are you, David, Joe and Kevin, my brother and stepfather, how strong are you? How much do you believe what you, you know, how much do you believe in? How much are you willing to stand up for? We need to get that really strong so that when situations arise, you have strength to lean upon versus just the whim of the way or the request of the corporate. And it really solidified my love for leadership, because leadership's not about managing. It's about being a strong individual, core valued, self-disciplined, really understanding that your role is not to do and to manage, it's to lead. And so that changed my course and my perspective of leadership. And then, like I said, when we hit 100 million, I was contemplating what my next chapter is. And I said, you know, what if I did that? And I called Chet, the founder, and said, hey, would you let me start this in St. Louis? He's like, what took you so long? And so that was, me coming back to my education, to my roots in teaching and coaching and loving to challenge people, especially the head of the system, to become a better version of themselves.
So what do you consider leading?
Great question. Leading is about believing in something. So leaders are believers. And, you know, whether you agree with whether you believe the same things or not, it's about having a belief that's rooted in lots of reflection, lots of work, identifying your core principles, your values, your passions, the purpose and the reason, and getting those so strong that you actually live according to what you believe. Like a lot of people might say, well, I believe in being honest. And meanwhile, they're lying, you know, and cheating and stealing. So you question, do you really believe that? Or do you just say you believe it? So when a leader really truly believes something to the point where their actions align with it, that's leadership. And people will follow that.
Interesting. Do you feel that you learned that along the path of growing the company?
Yeah, so we did it naturally as a family-run business, right? We believed in each other because we're family. And yeah. So then other people who are not family believe that there's something there that's, you know, these guys actually believe in each other, and these guys actually believe in servicing the customer, and these guys actually believe in us as individuals. So we didn't purposefully know what we were doing until we brought Built to Lead in. And then he said, okay, so if you believe it, I want it written. And I want to make sure that you're tying it to everything you do, and all your goals and your strategies and plans need to align with what you believe. And that has been a big deal.
Tell me a little bit about those transition points, the milestones that you faced along growing.
Yeah, well, great question. So lots of people out there will tell you when you hit, you know, 20 to 25 people, everything changes. When you hit 10 million, everything changes. When you hit 30 million, everything changes. 50 and 100, right? Well, I understand why that's said, but I don't subscribe that you have to lose anything. I actually think you gain things. And so for me, milestones represent an opportunity for growth. They represent an opportunity to get stronger, not compromise on what you believe. And so we were able to, all the way up to 100 million, stay relatively true to our core values. And then at 100 million, our core values became more New Balance's core values, which weren't far off, but they certainly weren't what we were when we were 30 million. And so my perspective on the milestones are, use it as an opportunity to get stronger, not necessarily believe the mythology out there that says, well, everything changes at 50 million and it's just harder to stay connected. I don't buy it. It's harder, yes, but you can. It just takes more work.
You've obviously had the chance to learn quite a bit, both about business and in particular about e-commerce.
Mm-hmm.
Do you consider that to be your realm, to be your expertise?
I certainly understand e-commerce and grew up in the era when everyone was learning on the job, so to speak. I feel, though, that doesn't necessarily mean that's all I understand. A lot of people say, where's your focus and you know, what's your target? My target is people who want to get more out of themselves and their companies. It doesn't have to be e-commerce. E-commerce gave me the experience of managing people, of looking at P&Ls, of, you know, strategizing and marketing and all that kind of stuff that has principles that can apply to anything. But when it comes down to the leadership characteristics, I think those are universal.
Is that where you'd like to spend your time in an ideal world?
Where?
Within leadership and really focusing on helping firms and the people who lead them.
Yeah, definitely the leadership is where I want to target. You start with them. If they step in and do the hard work first, and if they build themselves first and are committed to doing the work needed to be a high performer, it's kind of hard for the rest of the employees to say, well, I don't want to do that. You know, sometimes companies hire training and outside consultants to teach people, but who's teaching the leader, right? And so the leader needs to do it first.
And would you consider yourself, you used coaching as a word earlier, would you consider yourself a coach or a teacher or a consultant?
Yeah, that's a great question. The real word I use when I have a client is I'm a builder, because we're building something. And coach is overused nowadays. There's a lot of people who are coaches. There's a lot of people who are consultants. I understand it. I know why. I probably fall into that realm of, you know, general. But what I'm interested in is building something. So building the business. I want to see the business grow and thrive in alignment with who you are. I want to build you into the best version of yourself.
When you're building the best version of yourself, family and finding the balance between business, especially as a business owner, is difficult.
Yeah.
How did you go about that?
I believe in there's no such thing as work-life balance. I have learned that when you have work and life separate, they will never be in balance, because typically work, where you make your money, takes priority. It just does. And so what I've tried to do is blur that line and make them one. So my work is my life. My life is my work. That way I keep balance. And so my schedule isn't 9 to 5. My schedule's my life, right? So I've made my work my life. And when I read, I'm reading books for my quote unquote work, but it's because it's part of my life. When I'm with clients, I'm doing what I love. I'm helping them. I'm building into them. It's not work. It's my life. And so that's kind of one of those nuances to the conversation about work-life balance.
And how do you go about finding those clients? Obviously, you have wealth of experience, but a company that's just hit 200,000 is not going to be able to benefit in the same way that somebody who's just hit their first 2 or 3 million.
Right. My aim has been do good work with the clients who do hire me, focus on deeper relationships with a few, and not spend my time creating, you know, lots of collateral like websites and all these other things. Like that's not going to change people. What's going to change people is when I change someone and they tell someone. So it's the same common denominator we had with customer service, right? Take care of one customer, they tell 10 people. So when I get a client, from whatever way I do, whether it's, you know, a partner of mine at Built to Lead saying, hey, somebody's in St. Louis, talk to them, or an existing client who tells, you know, another, that's really the aim for me. And I've met a lot of people just going out and sharing who I am and what I believe, not in a salesy kind of way, just in a, you know, this is who I am. And if anyone's interested, have them call me.
Have you found St. Louis to be pretty receptive to that?
St. Louis has been a great city. There are a lot of very kind people here, a lot of really well-intentioned people. So I've been only in it a very short while, really truly networking, I'd say 3 months at best, because it didn't dawn on me that I would need to do this ever in my career at New Balance. I was just, you know, happy working. But the more I've investigated and met people, it's been a very open arm, meet good people, and they pass me on to other people, and I have no complaints.
You've had the opportunity to do some work with Parkway Spark as well.
Yeah, I have.
For those who haven't heard me talk about Spark before, I'm a big fan. They help students, high school students, become entrepreneurs. Could you tell me a little bit about your work there?
Yeah, I love that program. So it ties in with why I left education was curriculum, and Spark is not curriculum, it's real life, right? It's experiential. And I love that kids are taking a step out of the norm, trying something new. I love that Parkway's supporting it. I love that mentors around the city are investing in children just learning how to manage life as a business owner. What does it look like? What does it feel like? What does it smell like? I mean, they're learning this before they're declaring a degree, right? They're learning this before they're going to college. This is so impactful and influential at them understanding really what they're getting into. And I look back at me majoring in education. I probably wouldn't have majored in education had I known it was really more curriculum-based. I probably would have gone a different route. I don't know which one, but having an experience where I could have done that in high school, where I could have teased out my passions earlier, huge deal.
You've had the opportunity to see some of them develop a bit. Mm-hmm. Have you been able to take anything back to your own practice?
Yeah, I think I was just interacting with some students who I'm mentoring. We were having some good laughs. They made a comment about always a good laugh when we're together. And I said, hopefully always a good laugh and you never stop laughing. And I love their youthfulness. I love their belief, their optimism. I love that energy and perspective. And I think that it's a good reminder to not take yourself so serious and to enjoy and to have some fun and to be somewhat naive about the world and less jaded.
And that there's a term within the tech scene and within Silicon Valley style tech in particular, the reality distortion bubble.
Oh, yeah.
Do you think that having some level of that optimism without maybe the exaggeration that phrase implies?
Right.
Do you think that's important for leadership?
100%. I am unreasonably aspirational. Like, I just refuse to believe that anything's not possible. And I have owned it, I live it, and I've surrounded myself by realists so that I'm not caught up in my own, you know, unrealistically optimistic, you know, perspective. My wife is certainly falls into that category. She sees things a lot different than I do. And so when I'm out there dreaming, she's like, hold on, there's a reality here that you're missing. And so I think if you're not dreaming big, you can't see the potential, but then you need people that say, here's how you get there. So it's a balance. And I don't think there's, you know, many people who have both the ability to dream and, you know, make it operational. So you partner and pair. And that's where I would say, if you want to be a leader, then have the vision. I think leaders can also be operationalized. Then you need someone who's got vision to push you farther. So I think it's plays in that realm.
How, especially for those business owners who are at the beginning stages of their business, who are listening in, how do you go about finding that partner or that counterbalance?
It certainly goes with knowing yourself and spending time really being hard on yourself, saying, where's my strengths? Where's my weaknesses? And then getting out there and being honest and real with other people, saying, here's who I am. Here's the truth of me. And there, like I said, in this community, there are more than enough people who would say, I'll help, or I know somebody. But you got to get out there. You got to put yourself out there and be clear about, you know, not trying to be all things to all people and just embracing who you are.
Great. Now I want to shift gears a bit since you brought up books earlier.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if you're aware. The last question I ask every guest is recommending a book to the audience. But I want to get over a little early because I think you might have more than just the one book.
Yeah.
So are there any that you found really impacted you while you were building the company?
Yeah. While I was building Built to Lead or?
Before Built to Lead.
Before Built to Lead, Change Your Questions, Change Your Life was a good one. Certainly The 5 Dysfunctions of a Team is a good one. Good to Great. Those were books that we read early on. I would say more so out of context. I think you can read a lot in a book. And this is part of what I try to help my clients understand. Reading a book is one thing. Living and following up and taking action is another. So there's a lot of good books with a lot of great philosophy and a lot of great perspective and a lot of great inspiration. What do you do with it, right? And how does it really impact?
How do you take that step?
I have built up a what I call my virtual core. So my virtual core is no different than a physical core. When you look at somebody with a six pack, you kind of know their core defines and strengthens their whole being, right? The stronger your core, the stronger you can be and the more flexible and so on and so forth. So a strong virtual core allows you to have the same internal strength. So when I read a book, I'm able to look at myself almost as a entity of beliefs, of passions, of purpose, and then draw upon it in as how it fits. So for example, I'm reading Go Giver right now. It's a book that was referred to me by somebody that I met that I thought was pretty interesting read. And, you know, the very first principle is give more than you take, right? So I'm looking at myself saying, as I'm meeting people, am I giving more to them than I'm asking in return? And you know, making sure that, yeah, when I meet somebody, it's not just about me, it's about them. So you just bolt it on to what you already believe. If it's new, then again, you got to decide how will my actions support this.
Huh. So could you elaborate a bit on that virtual core?
Yeah, sure. So like I said, when you study the human anatomy, your core is your center. It helps if you have a back injury, it could be related to your core. When you have a knee injury, it could be related to your core. It's usually the center of all things of physical wellness.
Yeah.
With your virtual core, we build a virtual six pack. So the biggest one's your worldview. What do you believe? What we believe in life drives our behavior. So if I didn't believe in gravity, I might get out of bed and try to fly into the bathroom, right? But I do believe in gravity. So I know without question, I get out of my bed, my feet hit the ground and I walk, right? What other things that aren't as tangible as gravity do you really believe in that guide your step, right? And these are things that we don't often really dwell on, but they certainly most always influence our actions and our behaviors. Then you have your identity, so knowing yourself, and your principles, your core values, like how specifically do you work and live? Then we definitely want to bolt on passion, because passion, if you're not loving what you do and you're not fired up, then it's just work. And I just don't like just working. I think you can have what I call opus. So opus is a definition, is a word that translates to labor, but it's used for your labor of love. And so that's the kind of work that will inspire people. That's the kind of work that when you wake up, you're like, oh my gosh, I get to do this. Like, this is what I get paid for. So it goes to my work-life balance, right? So your passion and then your purpose. I think you have to have a big reason why you do this. What's the big aim? And then the last part of the core is your process. You know, how do you live it out every day? What are things that you do? If you're committed to believing in certain things, if you have a vision, what are you doing? And that's the process that I bring to the table.
And so that process then, that is what you help somebody work through?
Correct. So we start with the core, and actually the core starts with what I call discovery. Discovery is really getting your thoughts out of your head and on paper. Writing is an amazing form of development opportunity. It slows you down. It puts you on the hook for the things you write. And it's also a great way to influence yourself, because you read what you wrote. And so when you're reading what you wrote, you tend to be more influenced than reading somebody else's work. So we write a lot to put ourselves out there, and then we build the core. And then after the core, we create the opus, which is the real, what is the labor of love? What is the big work you want to do? And then we pop it out with productive actions. And what are we doing? And that's the process I take my clients through.
Fantastic.
Yeah, thanks.
So I want to end, since we've already asked you about books.
Yeah.
I'd like to wrap up just by asking you if you have any daily practices.
Daily practices for myself, daily disciplines.
Yeah.
Yeah, so my productive actions, or now they've become productive disciplines, is I expect myself to read no less than 20 hours a week.
Wow.
Yeah. It has become, because it's so much my passion, because I really want to help people, I want to study everything I can about leadership, psychology, performance, about even things unrelated. So, you know, I've spent some time studying musicians and bands, and U2 is one of those bands that has stood the test of time. And when you study them with the lens of leadership, and you study them within the lens of productive conflict and how they are a stronger organization because they're four distinct individuals, not four of the exact same, and what that diverse opinion does and how it's made them great. Like, I study that stuff because it geeks me up. And then I'm able to take that to my clients and relate to them. So, and again, I don't do it during 9 to 5. I'm listening to a book in my car. I'm reading a book at home. I have another book on my nightstand. It's just something I do. So I do that. And certainly working out from just staying healthy and physical and active as a part of my a weekly regimen. And then working and spending time helping others. So volunteering at Parkway and networking with other organizations that need help is part of what I do.
Great. Well, I think we'll turn the tables today, and I want to recommend Flow, The Psychology of Optimal Experience. Highly recommend this book to all of our listeners. It is specifically about finding that opus, then creating the environment to allow it to continue.
Yep.
Well, David, thank you for coming on today.
My pleasure.
Hopefully we'll be able to have you back sometime soon.
All right, will do.